So the next question we're going to talk about is, how does Priestley build sympathy for Eva Smith throughout the play? Obviously, Eva Smith is the character that we don't meet because she has tried to... Well, she has killed herself. So that in itself evokes a sense of sympathy that someone has been pushed to such drastic measures as to take their own life. But aside from the obvious, how is sympathy built? What do we think?
I think it's significant that she's only ever referred to in the third person. And as you say, we get to form our own opinions about Mr. Burling, the inspector, Mr. Burling's family, and so on. We never get to form our own opinions of Eva Smith because she's only ever seen through the eyes of other characters.
Yeah.
So the fact that as the audience, we have to acknowledge there's a bias towards the character, be it in favour of her from the inspector and subsequently Eric and Sheila, or against that sort of, or that girls of that sort from the older family members. Her, so we have to acknowledge that there is a bias for or against.
Yeah.
Her sympathy is kind of like the way that Hyde is, stick with me, the way that Hyde is like super evil at the start of Jekyll and Hyde.
Just don't really worry about that though, because obviously you've already done Hyde, that exam. Obviously. So,
but in the fact that like she's not actually seen, and most of the worst things that happen to her are just implied, like the fact that she commits suicide while she's pregnant is just implied.
Okay.
The fact that she becomes a prostitute is just implied.
Yeah, and the fact, even the fact that she was raped is just implied.
Yeah.
But what do we know? So we know that she's obviously got some courage from the first instance. So the first sort of the start of the chain is Mr. Burling sacking her.
Yeah.
And he's done this because she has organised a strike. She's referred to as a troublemaker. So even though Mr. Burling refers to her as a troublemaker, because the audience naturally is inclined to disagree with Mr. Burling, that means that we kind of see that, we interpret that troublemaker as perhaps someone that stands up for their principles.
Priestley, through dramatic irony, Priestley's already undermined the credibility of Mr. Burling.
Yeah, exactly.
Titanic and war speech.
Yeah.
So when it comes to his judgment of people,
we don't trust him.
No, exactly. We think, well, actually, he's clearly an idiot.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know what he's talking about. We've also got to remember that this was immediately subsequent to the Labour riot, the Labour issues, where large parts of the country were rising up in doing exactly what Eva Smith had done in her factory, trying to strike for better pay and better conditions. So the working classes of Britain in the 1940s would have actually been going through exactly the same process that Eva Smith was.
Yeah.
So their sympathy, the audience's sympathy, would definitely have been with Eva Smith because they'd have been going through exactly what she'd led in their own factories.
Yeah, and so that also takes a huge element of courage, I think, in particular if we think of this being set in 1912. So the role of women is very, very different to what it was in 1945, and certainly a different world to what it is now. But it would have taken a huge amount of courage for Eva Smith to have organised this strike. So that's something that we know about her. And when we have someone with virtues such as courage, we're then going to feel bad for them when we know that something bad has happened.
Yeah.
Do you also feel that Priestley's tapping into that very British quality of cheering for the underdog?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say she's like a martyr.
Mm.
She's almost sacrificed. Well, she has sacrificed herself because we know she's dead for the cause, and she's paid the price.
Yeah.
Well, very similar to sort of Pankhurst, you know, all of the votes for women where we have women starving themselves. Mm. You know, I can't remember who it was who threw herself in front of the horse and carriage.
Wasn't that Pankhurst?
Was it Emily Pankhurst? I can't remember. Sorry. Sorry, old history teacher. I'm not sure.
It was around that time. I'm fairly sure it was around
that time.
But
she's definitely a martyr for the cause.
Yeah.
And that's inherently sympathetic.
Yeah.
Someone has paid the ultimate price for something you believe in.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got her as this representative, not just for women, but also for the working class. So two categories of society that are disadvantaged at that time, which again, as you said, when we support the underdog, we're likely to support a working class woman. So we've got Arthur Berling. We've then got Sheila. You know, the initial sort of opposite in the women.
Really, I think the fact that Sheila's very easily relatable to Eva helps the sympathy, because Sheila, as soon as she hears about the death, is very
like, yeah. But I mean, when we first hear the Sheila that's in Millwoods,
yeah,
is, you know, who's jealous and spoilt and materialistic, and, you know, very almost one-dimensional, is not the Sheila that actually we grow to admire before, in the play.
No. Before she realizes that, when she comes in and walks in to the discussion about her father firing her, and she's very upset about it, that could be a way that Priestley's trying to make us sympathetic for her, because this girl's come in, she's very concerned, and brings out the emotion for Eva.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she is then fired from Millwoods. So, you know, the inspector is very clear when he's talking about this, about how she really can't catch a break. Mm. And then we know that she...
And it's a really petty thing she gets fired for, too.
Yeah.
It's something that
which again shows how petty Sheila was.
Yeah.
And the significance of the journey that she's gone through.
Yeah. We then have her affair with Gerald, which she has come to because she was in such a difficult place. And Gerald is seen, you know, almost like he's swanned in like a knight in shining armour, which then obviously goes horribly wrong, where she's been hanging out at this palace bar, which we know is...
a haunt for women of the town.
Yes, which is a nice way of saying that potentially she was... She was a prostitute.
And then kind of implying something that would be making her more sympathetic.
Yeah, which is weird because you actually normally... you normally don't have sympathy for prostitutes, but because...
I don't know.
I think it's because the way that we realise how she gets to it.
Yeah, it's that empathy. It is.
And then by creating sympathy for her for getting to that situation, Priestley's creating sympathy for all people.
All people, yeah.
It's unusual in that in society we usually see where there's been an affair, very often the woman is vilified and made out to be the one in the wrong, regardless of whether they're in a relationship, and the man, well, that's just what men do.
Yeah.
But actually, Priestley's subverted that, and Eva Smith, Daisy Renton, she's not seen as the villain of the piece. She's not this seductress that lures him away from his fiancée. We do feel genuine sympathy for her because of the chain of events.
Do you think Gerald actually loves her? And couldn't that be something that makes us sympathetic for her?
You see, I think...
Because if he actually loves her and the class division stops their marriage and Priestley's trying to make us realise that really Gerald did love her...
Because when he's asked if he loves her, by saying yes, knowing she's dead, by saying yes,
he's ruined everything. Yeah, there's no good. There's nothing good that comes from answering that question with a yes.
So why would he say yes? So actually, I think he was more than fond of her.
Yeah,
I think there was.
So Priestley's showing that even when she did have the chance with her knight in charming armor,
shining armor.
That word. She's denied it because of her class. The divisions of class ruined that for her.
Story, too. And that's, the relationship that could never be.
Daisy Renton, significance of the name?
Well, he meets her in the summer, too.
Yeah.
So you talk about, like, the fact that it's a summer fling and that her name's Daisy makes it very, like, ideal and sound very serene and happy.
Yeah.
Compared to what actually happens.
And again, representation of beauty.
Yeah.
And then rent, obviously, implicit in that is that rent, she has a price. She can be...
bought.
She can be bought, yeah.
It just adds in with this objectification of women that it was a kind of just natural.
And she's objectified, too, by Mr. Burley, which would be another thing that would create sympathy.
Yeah.
She's treated like just the... What does Eric say? That they're not just cheap labour.
They're people.
They're people,
and that's before he's undergone his interrogation.
Yeah.
So we can see that Eric is actually sympathetic to her.
Well, Eric opposes his father on most things. And yeah, and I think that's a large part of it. Okay, so we next learn. The inspector's gone through and he's doing his interrogation and he's got his lines of inquiry that he's doing one at a time. And we next learn about, who learned about after Gerald?
Mrs. Burling.
Yeah, so that's the charity where we get her third alias and the often forgotten, because she's referred to as Eva Smith, Daisy Renton, but it's important to remember that she presents herself to Mrs. Burling as Mrs. Burling, which is the reason for her refusal, really, of charity.
Now, I think this actually can be really helpful for building sympathy, because for me, I think there's a real sadness behind almost like what she could have been, and like the opposition between the Eva Smith character, the Daisy Renton character, and then she assumes that if she was Mrs. Burling, none of these things would have happened to her.
Yeah. And she could have also been better. She could have been a Croft.
Just your brain.
What?
This is just meant to be like a short, simple, helpful. I guess she could have been a Croft. No, I mean, like, so we've got that real juxtaposition between the different... Mr. Shirley!
Sorry.
I feel so sorry for your students. Ping pong brain. Ping pong! Pong! Ping! Okay, sorry.
It's very system.
The fact that she refers to herself as Mrs. Burling, I find really sad, because I think it's like that desperation that I know Mrs. Burling actually takes it as like an offensive sort of snub.
Yeah.
And perhaps there's an element of that as well, like a kind of
the question is, does
maybe
she know
middle
that
finger.
Well, the question is, does she know that Mrs. Burling is on the panel?
Yeah.
Because it could be that she's romanticising this idea of, oh, if everything was right, I would be carrying my Eric's baby and I would be Mrs. Burling.
Yeah.
So she's living this fantasy of being Mrs. Burling. Now, if she knows that Mrs. Burling is on the panel, then that's a very different motive to if she doesn't know if it's Mrs. Burling's on the
panel. And we don't know that.
No.
And, you know, there's no way of knowing that, so you could explore that. Mm. And, you know, obviously the different interpretations is really what gives you your high marks. That refusal of charity is the final... It's not the final interrogation in terms of Priestley, but that is the final straw in terms of Eva.
And it's interesting in terms of the narrative of the play that those are the two events that are out of chronological order.
Yes.
Because it builds up this dramatic irony again that we as the audience have worked out who the father is. Mm-hmm. And actually a lot of the a lot of the characters have worked out who the father is, because Sheila's asking
Her
Mrs. Burling
to stop
because Mrs. Burling is demanding that the young man is held to account and that he should pay. All the time it's building, and we as the audience are thinking, Eric hasn't been interrogated.
Yeah.
Where's this going to go? We know exactly where it's going to go, and it's somewhat inevitable.
Yes, and so she's refused charity from, ironically, the very person that should be most willing to help her out.
The grandmother of her child.
And that there is, very significant, because to be refused charity just doesn't seem in itself like, I mean, it seems paradoxical. Mm. You know, a charity is there to help people. She needs help and she's been refused. Mm-hmm. So even when you go to the institutions that are there to support you, you're being rejected. And she's just been rejected constantly by her employers, by the men in her life. Society has basically chewed her up and spat her out. So I think that all of that adds to the sympathy that we feel for her, even before we get to the matter of her suicide and her very painful death. I know that, you know, it's described as, like agonising death that she's...
Well, it's that line where at the start, Sheila asks, was she pretty? And the inspector replies, she was pretty, implying that the death had been gruesome in some way.
Do we think the fact that she's pretty adds to the sympathy?
Could do. I don't know too much about that, though. I would just say that, because you, as the play goes on, you watch Sheila grow and feel more sympathetic for her. And yeah, I think she's a very...
It's more about Sheila.
And I think, but also, Sheila's a very relatable character in some ways.
Yeah.
Because she's not extremely arrogant at the start, and she's not extremely naive either. She's kind of in between. And because she grows to be sympathetic, that's kind of like the... What's the word? The audience's experience as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think, well, the ending too, not to change the topic, but the ending when there's like the sigh of relief almost that they think it was just a hoax and everything's just fine, it wasn't a real issue, and then the actual phone call comes, that climactic moment is a really big part of driving home not just sympathy for Eva and what actually did happen, and we know for sure now, but the millions and millions of Eva Smiths that it happens to.
Yeah.
So it's not just sympathy for her, but what she symbolizes.
What she represents.
Yeah.
I think that's the point. So the role of Eva is to make sure that this doesn't happen again. Mm. You know, whether that's on like a singular scale that someone is unfortunate enough to have been go through all of these things, but also actually the next time that you are in a temper when you're in a shop and you want to throw your waste around and use your power to, for wrong, basically don't do it.
Yeah.
And
obviously when you do the exam, you need to not just talk about the sympathy for Eva, but then what that represents
for the working class.
That's how you get
Eva Smith. That's a metaphor for
other things.
Yeah.
Or Inspector Gould is a metaphor for other things.
And remember not to talk about them as characters as well. They are constructs of Priestley.
Yeah.
So through the character of Inspector Gould, Priestley says
so on,
rather than Inspector Gould says, because he doesn't, he's a fictitious character.
And that's just a narrative then.
Yeah.
If you're just saying what he says, not what Priestley's doing it for.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just retelling the story.
Okay, so sympathy is built for Eva through the actions that the characters do
to her,
through the fact that she's not actually there to give us a voice because we know that she's killed herself, through the fact that she represents a significant number of the population that are being mistreated.
Yeah, the sidelined majority.
Okay, great, good luck.